The words mass gravesite seem like something you'd expect to hear in a conversation about Bosnia or Cambodia, not about a cemetery in a tiny Missouri River hamlet like Hardin. But when a break in a levee some 15 miles away sent the swollen Missouri River rushing over the graveyard here, it separated caskets from soil and made a mess of the graves. Coffins were found floating throughout the floodplain for weeks. Some had been buried here for almost 200 years, and their remains were decomposed and too hard to identify.
Buried all the unknowns in a mass gravesite here.
How many are there?
800 plus.
Stephen Shirley is the caretaker of the Hardin Cemetery. He says there were so many exhumed coffins, they had to line them up at the county fairgrounds while the coroner and volunteer funeral workers tried to identify them. There's now a small lake the rushing floodwater gouged out in the middle of the graveyard.
Beautiful spot.
Well, thank you.
On one side, the original tombstones still stand in random order on the grassy lot. By contrast, on the other side of the lake, stones are set in symmetrical rows in concrete slabs, one behind the other. These were the tombstones the flood washed away.
Those are stones that we recovered from the lake. You can kind of see, for example, over there, the matter stone was stained by the water a little bit. We just recovered them and reset them and cleaned them up a little bit.
Volunteers and cash donations came in from as far away as Germany, and when the graveyard was restored, officials erected a marble memorial with the names of the bodies that were never recovered etched in the stone.
We had the lake pumped down, and then we got so low that the water was coming in faster than four pumps could handle it, so we never did get to the bottom of the lake.
How many bodies did you find?
There probably is 50 or 60 bodies that are not accounted for.
And Terry Johnson's grandparents were among them. She regularly visits the cemetery to remember her grandmother, even if it's just to visit a mass grave.
And Grandma used to always say, "Now, I want you to keep flowers on my grave." And so at least I got the stone where I can go down there and decorate the grave.
The town of Pattonsburg, Missouri, up I-35 through the Missouri River Basin, suffered losses of a different kind. It was one of a number of entire cities the Federal Emergency Management Agency bought out, encouraging residents to relocate to higher ground. Pattonsburg is surrounded on all sides by tributaries and creeks, and when the Missouri River crested at record levels in July of 93, the area filled up like a bathtub, says former school superintendent Gene Walker.
One of the people in Chicago said, "Well, I just don't know why you folks are next to the river." Well, they all were working on the assumption like we were sitting on our front porch fishing in the river. It's 2 miles from the river to the edge of town where the dike is. It filled that entire area up with water and then came over the dike.
FEMA came in, appraised each property, and offered the town $12 million. Businesses and public buildings weren't included. Not everyone was happy.
You put that many people in a room and throw a rock in, some people will like the rock and some people won't. We had folks who, left with a smile and thought they did real well, and you had somebody else that's, "No, I didn't get enough."
After a series of long community meetings and consultations with architects and engineers, most took the money and the option to move. Once the town was torn down, the local government rented the acreage to farmers. Director Ang Lee doctored the demolished street front to use for his movie Ride with the Devil. Gene Walker cruises his SUV along naked roads through soybean fields and stops at a crossroads. There's a street sign bent 45 degrees to the ground next to a rusty fire hydrant.
Oh, of course, this is what ZZ, no, this is not ZZ, what's it say, West First Street?
West First Street.
First Street would have run this way, and then Main Street was from here down.
Nodding his head down a gravelly road toward what's now an expanded farm cooperative, Walker says the city center once had a watch repair, a bank, and a bowling alley. Across the railroad tracks, there were welders, the offices of The Call, the city's newspaper, and standing on that corner over there, a Western auto store.
And on this corner was Graham's Hardware that did a lot of the sewer and water work and plumbing and all that stuff around for people.
Basically, it's flat. A few of those businesses have moved up here to New Pattonsburg, as residents call it. The commercial center is a block called Main Street, appropriately. It's separated by a grassy median and the only trees in the area. The shops are within a stone's throw of the houses and lawns. There's a distinctive movie set feel here, as if the whole place was lifted up and dropped on some farm fields, kind of like Dorothy's house landed in Oz. Residents tootle around in small vehicles, seeming to pull up out of nowhere.
Casey's one of our older residents. He drives his golf cart around rather than get his car out. Thinks it's a lot simpler, so.
Parking's a premium as people come and go from Main Street. There is a chiropractor, a consignment shop, and a photographer. The Old Memories Cafe and Pinky's Sub Shop do a brisk business at lunchtime. But if the town seems surreal, to drive around is to see how reality-based officials tried to be. The new school is a series of space-aged domes that are energy efficient and sustainable. There's a retirement community and low-income housing. The back streets are a patchwork of newly built homes and those that were lifted off their foundations and moved up here.
And this one right here is ours.
Gene Walker's 19th century Victorian was one of them.
1876.
Was that hard to move?
Not really, because it was all built at once. See, and they moved all of it to leaded glass there, and then there's actually stained glass windows right here. Yep.
Our tour of Pattonsburg ends back down at the river bottoms, where Lyle and Donna Warford stayed put after the 93 floods, and today they're about the only family still living in the old town.
Hello, Laura. I'm Donna Warford. Come on.
It's a sprawling ranch home with a sign over the door that reads, Welcome Home. A massive arched oak tree shades the whole house.
Beautiful home.
You're stepping into what was once 3.5 to 4 feet of flood water.
Friends wouldn't let the Warfords go home for a day or so after the floods. When they did, they found mud and silt in the sink, stinky, putrid water covering her antique furniture.
In fact, we had a Siamese cat and a 40-pound pig on the table that had floated in and then didn't know where to go.
Donna's mother's hand-sewn quilts were soaked, and many of their antique clocks were swept away. It moves Lyle and Donna to this day to recall the help they got from friends, family, strangers, even prisoners from the Cameron Corrections Facility.
There's always somebody worse off than you are.
Probably the best part is the help we had.
There is never any way we can ever repay the people that helped us. We had tremendous response from people away from here, people we didn't know.
Lyle's dad was the Pattonsburg mayor in the 40s. The Warford son is the mayor today. Donna says it would be very hard for them to move away.
Roots get planted pretty deep, and I'm not saying we ever, ever want to experience another flood, but this is home.
The Warfords got the same disaster relief as everyone else in Pattonsburg, $10,000, and an offer on their home if they wanted to relocate. Lyle estimates it would have cost 20 times what they were offered, so he turned down the deal. And because he's not in the residential area of town, he's never been eligible for flood insurance. They know they've made a tough choice.
And you know what? If it's not raining, we don't think about it.
Army Corps of Engineers flood management specialist Judd Kniev says it's fine to stay in the floodplain as long as those who do remember one thing.
You never eliminate the risk.
Strolling along the gravel bike path atop the well-manicured L385 levee in Riverside, Kniev points out the new technology like gates and drainage pipes designed to control seepage and overflow. This was a small agricultural levee in 1993, like many that were involved in the floods. Since then, the Corps and local governments have started to collaborate more in an effort to maintain the quality of the levee system. Kniev says the Corps' primary focus is to communicate a new message.
The biggest change fundamentally in the last 20 years for the Corps of Engineers is that we're putting a lot of emphasis on communicating that when you live and work in a floodplain, you're always at risk. It doesn't matter what type of flood risk management project that's been constructed to help you.
In 1993 and again during floods in 2011, critics claimed the Corps made bad decisions in efforts to mitigate the impact of flooding. They say politics, as always, played too great a role. But as development creeps back into the floodplain, even top experts agree the focus must be on the message. If you live near the river, you're never immune to the impact of floods. Laura Ziegler, KCUR News.